Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're here to continue our expectations series tonight. And we'll be talking about the linemen Jovan Gwynn and Trey Hendrickson tonight. Joining me to do that is Brandon Croxton. Brandon, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Ken. It's always great to have conversations about the Ravens with you. I look forward to it all the time.
Recording this on a Friday night, just before 10 o'clock, and we just watched the Orioles choke up a pretty decent opportunity to come back in a game against the Nationals. So end up losing 3-2. Frustrating, but the Orioles have been a little more clutch over the past week or so against the Yankees and on the homestand before this game.
Yeah, frustrating season all around, but yeah, I'm hoping for a turnaround soon.
Me too. Yeah. Anyway, Jovan Gwynn, let's talk about him first. He turned 27 in March. He's got 11 career snaps. I think those two numbers tell you a lot of what you need to know about Jovan Gwynn. That's 11 career snaps, by the way, on offense. He also has played 76 more snaps on special teams. And he's actually a fourth-year player right now. So the Ravens, he'll be a free agent at the end of this year. Essentially, he's here in Baltimore. Ravens were looking for linemen, and was part of that. But the other thing is Ledford coached him in Atlanta and obviously likes him.
Yeah, so, he spent 3 years with Dwayne Ledford, and he came over as part of the rebuild for the interior offensive line. Obviously, the big loss of the line was losing Linderbaum to free agency, but they signed Simpson, Danny Pinter, while drafting Ione and Beerson. And I kind of think the signing of Gwynn is kind of how which you'll see a lot of offensive coordinators when they switch teams, they'll bring a backup quarterback in to help, teach the offense different terminology and, basically kind of be a coach in the locker room and in the quarterback room. And I kind of have a feeling that Gwynn is kind of going to be the same for Ledford in the offensive line this year. He's going to come in.
I would agree.
Yeah. He's going to come in, teach how Ledford likes to do things, how he likes spacing, footwork, all of that, and try to, really kind of accelerate the learning curve that the offensive line will have with Ledford.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a lot of value to that. I wouldn't be shocked in any sense if he made the team. I also wouldn't be shocked if he were cut and was maintained on the practice squad. I don't think there's going to be a bunch of other organizations, busting down the door to get a fourth-year player in who they know they'd lose in a year at the best. He actually, coming out of South Carolina, he's a 2022 draft pick, I think. Yeah, let's see, 2023 draft.
23.
Yeah.
Yep.
So he played, his last season was 22 and it was South Carolina. So he's played in the SEC. Was a seventh round pick. So he actually got drafted. He was not a UDFA coming out of school. Didn't have bad measurables. And 34 bench reps is the big number for him. And a 5'12 40 is good for an offensive lineman. The thing that was not good is that he's got 31.75 inch arms. So that's a little short to play guard. It's short to play center. You certainly wouldn't draft a guy, hopefully at the top of an NFL draft, who would have arms that short, although Linderbaum is close. Center might be the normal position for him to gravitate to.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I think he's kind of center or bust with this team. We have a lot of big guards, 320 plus in size, and he's the run to the litter. Just over 300 pounds, but the short arms really kind of make him a center only really prospect for this team.
I'm with you. And I know how much you love centers, opposing centers for your time as a defensive lineman.
Oh yeah. They're the absolute, bell of the ball, those cheap shot artists, hit you in the ribs when you're not looking.
That's a certain trigger points. I know some guests have. I love bringing that up sometimes with you. So reportedly, and this was generated by AI when I did a little search about his injury history, because I thought maybe that was part of why he didn't play his 2 years in Atlanta, because he basically was inactive for a number of games and was active for some on special teams only. reportedly he's never had an injury, missed practice, or missed a game due to health reasons. And I don't know how far that is supposed to go back, but it certainly is I believe, true at the NFL level, or it wouldn't have been there. That has got to be a large portion of the reason why Ledford likes him so much.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you're able to stay healthy and practice every practice, not miss any practice, obviously not miss any meetings, you're really showing a lot of a good work ethic. And that's something, you know, that's a great example to show, even though obviously he doesn't have the most talent in the world. So, but yeah, showing, you know, he's part of, you know, kind of changing the culture and, you know, showing, you know, what Ledford is expecting from all his linemen.
Right. Now the Ravens already have a couple of guys like this, but Jovan Gwynn has an extraordinary total of preseason snaps, 394 in 3 years so far. That's, you know, 131 plus per year. Carson Vincent had 178 or 168, whatever it was last year, which was about the highest was in the entire NFL. But he's sort of similar to Vincent in that everything he's done, and Bullock also, in the sense that everything he's done has been in preseason in terms of the positives he's accumulated there. He's been a very good pass blocker there, by the way. Not necessarily, context has to be considered. He's probably playing towards the end of games, but that's 237 career pass blocking snaps with only one pressure allowed in the preseason.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, almost kind of the Crash Davis of the NFL. You know, great in the preseason, and you know, never really getting a shot in the regular season. But I think he's going to come here and he's going to compete. You know, for center snaps, compete with Bullock. And as of right now, the Ravens haven't signed or traded for, you know, somebody that's going to be a clear-cut starter at center. So I think he's going to get a shot to, you know, at least win that job in training camp so far.
A lot of guys, you know, are there hoping for a chance at center. I think Emory Jones is actually the most far-fetched one of the group in terms of you know, who could win. I think Bullock is reasonable. Unfortunately, I think Pinter might be at the front of the group right now. I don't think he's the best candidate. I don't think he's the best player of the group, but I think he might be the guy, since the Ravens by their actions have paid him more money than others. Then there's Gwynn, who's a possibility. I suppose Bjornsson could end up there, you know, among other players. I had a whole list I did with Voss of the guys who had a small chance. Yeah, here it is. So Pinter, Bullock, if I can only read my own handwriting, Jones is on the list, Gwynn. Oh, forgot about Dawkins. He's the one I forgot about, and Bjornsson. And then there's other, because hey, it's a wide open field, and the Ravens still may make a move.
Right, absolutely. Like I think maybe we go into training camp, you know, seeing how this competition shapes up, and if they don't like what they see, they might go out and make a trade for somebody. Or if they do like what they see, or think they can get by with average play from, you know, any of the potential candidates, I think maybe you roll with that.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly would be a lot cheaper. Somebody was on the show and saying that at Bullock could be not just 80% of the player at 20% of the price, but he might be 80% of the player at 4% of the price as Linderbaum. Or maybe it's 65% of the player at 4% of the price. That still sounds like a pretty good bargain in any kind of relative sense.
Yeah. It seems like he's the front runner. It seems like the Ravens really like him as a potential candidate. So yeah, we'll see, but it is also kind of scary because he is unproven so far.
Now the other player who Ledford has no attachment to, because he played here for now 2 years and with, you know, fairly minimal success, honestly, is Andrew Voorhees, who appears to be out of a game, out of a job, because Simpson was brought in, obviously, and paid to play that left guard position. And Ioane, they didn't draft to sit on the bench or to play backup or move to center, any of those things. So I think that it's pretty clear that Voorhees has already been relegated to a backup status for 2026.
Yeah, I believe so. I think, you know, it depending on how Pinter and Gwynn and kind of all of the other candidates look, he might be fighting for roster spot because it, you know, the downside of him getting that that bonus playing time pay is him being almost too expensive to be a backup. So, you know, if he has to be head and shoulders above and better than kind of any of the potential backups if he doesn't win a job, obviously, at center. But if he any of the top backup jobs, he has to be clearly better than any and all of the other competition to really have a roster spot, because you know you can save a lot of money for, you know, and even for a player just as good.
I'm in complete agreement, and that's exactly where I was going with that. And it kind of got reminded of it, but both short arms and a lot of bench reps, which is also something Voorhees has, is a guy who, you know, compares fairly directly to a player like Jovan Quinn. And before, he's a little bit bigger, so he's also a little bit more of a vertical build, which might not be as valuable, frankly. But Gwynn is a guy who Ledford already likes, and even though there's a difference of year four versus year three, which is a not insignificant amount of incremental sand in the hourglass in Voorhees' favor, I think there's a possibility that Gwynn specifically beats out Voorhees for that spot.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I mean, if you keep Gwynn, he's basically making pretty much the vet minimum. Voorhees is making over $3 million. Do the math, and, you know, a team that's going to be tight under the cap is every year tight under the cap and going to need money next year as well. I mean, Voorhees really has to kind of show, or else, you know, I think it's possible that maybe he gets traded to another team. I mean, he has starting experience. He hasn't been fall off the table bad, but he just hasn't been good so far. But maybe it's a possibility that at the end of training camp, he gets traded for, you know, sixth or seventh round pick, something like that.
Yeah, very, very, very reasonable possibility. In a sense, I mean, you know, the Ravens got him for a sixth round pick from a year ahead that they traded to get to trade back into the seventh round to pick Voorhees. I'm not saying it would make it a good draft pick. I'm not saying Voorhees was a good draft pick because of that. They obviously wasted a lot of development time trying to make Voorhees into something, and so far that has not paid off. I've kind of been of the opinion that with 2 years worth of runway, I thought his chance to be a backup was pretty good, but it really does completely tilt the scales when he makes three times as much as a player like Gwynn or like Bjornsson.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if you think back, like, had he not torn his ACL and what was it? It was a combine. He was probably like a third or fourth round pick. So to get him in the six and, you know, and be able to, you know, give him the non-football injury list and have four full years of for him for just a six round pick. I mean, it was a great pick. It just hasn't worked out for whatever reason. And now Voorhees, it's kind of on Voorhees to really, you know, kind of show this is a big turning point for his career. Like, you got to show that you can, you know, win a job possibly at center, or you could be looking for another job in another team.
All right. I think maybe the key for Voorhees is just going to be go out and have an outstanding preseason, because there's not a lot he can prove, even to the coaches, even to an offensive line coach who really cares about the decision, and much less so to a mentor who's going to be less directly involved with any kind of offensive line positional coaching and drills and room work that's going on. It's going to be very hard to win the job with what he does in practice. He's going to have to do it with his live fire reps, where they do grade the practice reps as well. I'm not saying that they mean nothing, but he's really going to have to do it, I believe, with live fire reps. I think that's where the issue has been. And he's a very dominant preseason. If there was a player, you know, an offensive lineman, whoever really needed a dominant preseason to prove his value, it's Voorhees this year.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, let's talk about what a good season is for Jovan Gwynn. What's your good season look like?
So, yeah, I had him as make the roster as the ninth or 10th offensive lineman and top backup at center. And just really, you know, help the entire offensive line unit make a successful transition to the Ledford system.
All right, that's good, and that's a you got him at the 60th percentile. Then you have him making the team. So basically, I'm sorry, that's the way I do it. That's not necessarily the way you do it. You're just assigning it as a good season in a qualitative sense, right?
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Okay.
All right, I'll tell you what my good season looks like. I say gets a chance at center during both camp and preseason games. Does enough to stay in the conversation at least until cutdown day, when he either makes the team as a backup IOL or is the top IOL on the practice squad in case of emergency. He returns to the 53 at some point during the season due to injury or quality of play issues and is at least the eighth man active for some games. So I'm kind of setting the bar pretty low for Gwynn here. Ledford may love him enough that he's going to want him higher than that. But, you know, you have two, you typically going into a game with an eight-man game. If he's not the starter, they're going to have one pure IOL backup. Then they're going to have Emory Jones. And then they're going to have Carson Vincent, who's a pure tackle backup. So it doesn't leave a lot of opportunity for that IOL backup. He's got to be the top IOL backup ready to go. And some IOL has got to be screwing up to such a degree that they don't even want to activate him for him to be the eighth man.
Sure. Yeah.
All right. How about a great season? What does a great season look like?
Yeah, I have as winning the starting job either out of training camp or being an injury replacement at some point in the season, and to play at above replacement level, probably below average to average NFL league center as, and I think that would be a great season for him.
All right. All right, I buy a lot of that, I think. My great season is Ledford's guy is either the first or second option at center, and the Ravens keep him on the roster, possibly to replace Voorhees with a potential cap savings. Contributes as the sixth offensive lineman on the field goal kick unit, as an IOL backup, or even as the starter, but that would be at center, if circumstances dictate. Pass blocking is no worse than the 30th percentile, I'd say, among his position group. I really hope that position group is center if he's forced into action.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I don't know if there's really kind of any other pathway to being on the field other than center for him. Because I mean, there's just so much depth on the team at guard between the two starters and Voorhees and Jones and Pincher. All three of those can play guards, and I think maybe Voorhees isn't a guarantee to be on the roster, but more or less from what they paid Pincher, he's probably going to be on the roster, and Jones is almost definitely going to be on the roster as you know, with the ability to play guard. So, yeah, I just think Gwynn's path forward is center, really.
Yeah, I think you're probably correct. And in a lot of ways, Corey Bullock, who you didn't even mention there, is probably a better chance, to win that center job. But if he doesn't, sure, I don't see them cutting him. I really don't see that happening. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you know, Gwynn eats his lunch. I guess it's possible they could keep Voorhees over him, although I don't think that's likely. I think they really want another guy who can play center on the roster and not have to depend on somebody they convert in season from guard.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you know, and again, they still might, you know, make a move in training camp to bring somebody in that can play center. So, you know, he's got a little bit of an uphill battle, but I think if he really competes well and plays well in the preseason, he's definitely got a shot to be on the team and possibly even start for the first time in his career.
All right. Percentage chance that he wins the starting job at center right out of camp. Voss and I already put our predictions in there. I'll tell you what ours were after I hear yours.
I'll go 35%.
35%.
I think Bullock. Wow, okay. Yeah, I think Bullock is still the odds-on favorite, and I do still think that, you know, I think there's a pretty decent possibility that they bring somebody from the outside. So
okay,
yeah, I'm going 30.
Okay, I had 5%, and Voss had 10% on Gwynn. But if you, it's a crowded field when it's crowded, adding up to 100%. I'll tell you what my numbers were. Pincher at 20%, which I'm not happy about, but he could be the guy. Then Bullock at 15, Gwynn at 5, Jones at 5, which is probably too high on Jones, honestly. Dawkins at 15, that might be too high on him too. Bjornstam at 10, which is Bjornstam. That's probably too high. And then other at 30.
Okay.
So I think that very likely that they'll go outside and get somebody. And, you know, they're still talking about it. The chatter is not going away about that. It just seems like fairly likely the Ravens might try something like that. I'd even love it if they went out and got Kevin Zeitler and made him a center. You know, he's played right guard his whole career. I wouldn't mind it, not even a little bit, if they just said, hey, you're the center now.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Let's move on and talk about Trey Hendrickson. I think there might have been a couple people who saw the two players on this list and said, you know what? I want to tune into that thing for Trey Hendrickson, and they've been waiting for this moment. biggest free agent move for the Ravens, signing for 4 years and $112 million right after they rescinded the Crosby trade. And as it was reported, and I guess it doesn't matter how we feel about this, but as it was reported, Hendrickson himself said that the Ravens had talked to him about playing with Crosby on the opposite side.
Yeah, I was surprised about that. And, you know, I think maybe that was just probably more talk than any kind of actual truth to that, because, I think at the time, the Ravens were still in crisis management mode with everything that's going on with everything that went on with Crosby and the rescinding of the trade. So I find it hard to believe based on kind of what their cap situation is, but I guess anything's possible. You could make maneuvers to make that happen. But considering also that they did not sign Lamar to an extension, I find it kind of far-fetched that they would have paid Crosby and Hendrickson at the same time.
Oh, good point. Yeah, that would have been seemingly unlikely. They did some things to push money into the future that they have not done a lot of before. The big one being effectively guaranteeing Ronnie Stanley will be with the team through 27. So he was signed that 3-year deal, of course, but it was a 2-year out for a $16 million savings in if they cut him next year. But now they've restructured his contract and pushed his 2026 salary into 27 and void years. So it's no longer an option to cut Ronnie Stanley next year. The other thing about the Crosby trade, I gotta just ask you this, because you're a cool head. You won't overreact in either direction to this. But Diana Rossini, who I don't give a crap about her and Mike Vrabel having an affair. It doesn't bother me the slightest. These older people, they married people do things, and it's not always a good idea what they do. But here's what bothers me about it. I thought reporting standards were just terrible on the Crosby situation. She knowingly quoted a source who could not possibly have the information. So she knowingly quoted a source who did not know and presented it that way. And now I wonder, who was that source? Because there's two possibilities I really hate. Number one is, it's what it often is an agent of the player who they cite as an NFL source. That's not an NFL source. That's an NFL adjacent source. You know, if you're an agent, you don't work for an NFL team. You don't work for the league. You're an agent who's a arbiter with the league, or you're a negotiator with the league. That's not the same thing. So I don't like that. And I really, really would not have liked it if she got that quote from Mike Vrabel.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think, yeah, again, I'm kind of with you, like them having an affair or whatever is their own business, but it could potentially affect her credibility if she was using Vrabel as a source, or, you know, the quote unquote unnamed source, the unknown NFL insider, NFL, you know, coach or whatever that, and using him as that for a lot of her reporting, and it turns out that it's not factual. Obviously, that hurts her integrity as a reporter. So,
right,
yeah, it's interesting. The
nature of this one, it didn't matter who she was quoted, who was quote unquote an NFL insider, whatever NFL insider there was. I don't care if they were the janitor at the Ravens facility, or at the Raiders facility, maybe even better, or if it was the GM of a third party team who was familiar with how these kind of things work. She didn't talk to anyone who'd seen the medical records. And that's what this was all about. And it's very clear from the banter back and forth and from DaCosta's press conference afterward talking about it, that he couldn't say. But then at the end of that press conference, he thanked all the doctors involved for being, spending all the time on this and yada, yada, yada. He danced around the why they didn't do it the whole time. And maybe he's just laying out smoke there or gorilla dust to talk about that, thanking the doctors for their work on the thing. But it certainly seems to me it was medically related that this trade was reversed.
Yeah, I hated all of the Ravens got cold feet at the end reporting and talk that was going around. I was like, the Ravens, they had been talking about this move for months. This wasn't like a spur of the moment. Hey, we should trade two of our first round picks for Max Crosby. And, a day later they call the Raiders. They've been planning and trying to figure out, the best path forward to improve the team over the offseason for months. And I'm sure they were in discussions with the Raiders, with agents, like every other team is at the combine. And even before that this plan, their plan of an action was months in the making. And so to me, at the very last second, this trade went through. Uh-oh. Now we don't want it. Two first round picks. I thought it was.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.com. For some, summer is their favorite season. Travel picks up, kids are out of school, and adventure is the focus. For others, juggling it all can be tough, can make you feel overwhelmed, and can make you count down the minutes until the kids are back in school. I know I look forward to summer as a time to take a break, but as a self-employed person, time spent away from my work is time I stress over wasting. That's where BetterHelp comes in. BetterHelp is a quality therapist who work according to a strict code of conduct and are fully licensed in the U.S. BetterHelp does the initial therapist matching for you so you can focus on your therapy goals. A short questionnaire helps identify your needs and preferences, and their 12-plus years of experience and industry-leading match fulfillment rate means they typically get it right on the first time. If you aren't happy with your match, switch to a different therapist at any time. With over 30,000 therapists, BetterHelp is the world's largest online therapy platform, having served over 6 million people globally, and it works. With an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 for a live session based on 1.7 million client reviews. You don't have to say yes to everything this summer. Find support in therapy. Sign up and get 10% off at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
It was just kind of ridiculous reporting. Now, at the same time, I'm glad that it did get rescinded because personally, I hated the trade.
Yeah,
I mean, two first round picks for just about any player that isn't a star quarterback is pretty much too expensive. Yeah. And to me, I mean, if you think about it, we signed Trey Hendrickson for the same amount of money that we were going to pay Crosby, and we get Ione, and we're going to have whoever we draft, next year in the first round. I'd much rather have that than Max Crosby.
It's the easiest call imaginable. And I just can't stand the people who constantly are treating draft picks like they're party favors. That's not what they are. They're the entire future of the franchise, or a good bit. I'll tell you, an even more basic statement, though. Maybe you agree with this one regardless. The future of your franchise is in the hands of your young players, which includes your current and future draft picks. Mm-hmm. And all the positive surprises you're going to get on play come from those players. You rarely, rarely, rarely get a positive surprise on play from a 30-year-old player or a 31-year-old player. And you're paying market value almost always for that player. And then you really get a positive surprise. You can get a negative surprise. They can get hurt and be done. Or all of a sudden, they have their performance fall off the table like Marlon Humphrey did, say, this last year. Yeah. Injuries.
Marcus being Williams. Or Marcus Williams.
Marcus Williams. Great point.
A couple years ago. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway, let's keep going with Hendrickson. We'll just get upset and down rabbit holes and all. been a consistently impactful pass rusher until this last year. And he's still a good pass rusher, by the way, this last year. There's nothing wrong with his per snap productivity. He's off a little bit, but not off dramatically. But he had, of course, consecutive 17 and a half sack seasons in 23 and 24. Remained effective in despite the groin injury in 25, but that was only 285 snaps.
Yeah. And also the last 6 years, he's had the third most sacks in the league behind only TJ Watt and Myles Garrett. He's had 74. Myles Garrett has a whopping 95 sacks over the last 6 years. Amazing. Which, yeah, is incredible. He's been an absolute premier pass rusher over these last 6 years. And I mean, you know, third most in the league, even though he was hurt for most of this past season. It's an incredible. Yeah.
Yeah. There are obvious questions coming off the season with a groin injury. And that is there a reason to believe that he may have lost something due to the injury? And I think my answer to that is probably not. It being a groin injury, they've checked him out. I think they are comfortable that he's going to be able to play and has basically put the groin injury primarily in his past.
Yeah, I agree. That's an injury that could potentially linger throughout a season if you know, it's constantly bothering you, you re-injure it, you re-pull it at some point in the season. But long-term, a groin injury is not something that is going to should affect you long-term. But right. I mean, yeah, but he is getting older, and there's obviously concern that, you know, the wear and tear of, you know, these past few seasons can be starting to wear on him, and, you know, kind of have a decline in his production over these, you know, these next few years that he'll be with the Ravens.
Right. And I'm completely agree with that. I think they need to be very careful taking precautions about that. So whether it's a loss of effectiveness or potentially additional vulnerability to the next injury, whatever that might be, could be another groin injury. I guess that'd be a risk, but it could be other soft tissue stuff. It could be something else just because, hey, he's a little bit older player now.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, and with the Bengals these last few years, I mean, even last year before he got hurt, he's among the highest in snap totals over these last few years. So you can probably I wouldn't necessarily expect 17 and a half sacks from him this year, just for the mere fact that the Ravens like to rotate their offensive linemen. He's going to play fewer snaps. And, you know, fewer snaps, I mean, even if he keeps up the, you know, the pressure rate and the sack rate, you know, just the sheer volume of numbers, you know, his snaps go down, all of those numbers will kind of go down in concert with that.
Yeah, I think his per snap productivity could stay similar to what it's been, say, somewhere between 24 and 25. In terms of what his productivity would be, which would put him about, you know, 15th in the league or something in terms of pass rush productivity, which would the Ravens would be getting what they paid for if that were to happen. I would expect him to play less snaps, almost certainly, just because of the way the Ravens roster is now constructed. Remember, going into the draft, we talked any number of times probably about the Ravens not having the depth of run defenders necessarily at edge. Now they have that in spades with Tavius and Young. And they really, not only do they need snaps and need to establish themselves as rookie, it's a perfect complement to get a player like Hendrickson off the field. It's often, you know, is said that he's not a particularly good run defender. That may be somewhat overstated, but I don't think it's too overstated. I think he's, if I had to, you know, compare him to a pass lineman, maybe a little bit like Jared Allen in terms of occasionally runs himself out of plays on the run, but compensates for that with outstanding pass rush results.
Yeah. And not to include, you know, Calais Campbell, who could also play out at the edge as well. Mm-hmm. He's definitely, you know, he's been one of the best run defenders in the whole league for pretty much his entire career. So yeah, there's lots of depth and there's lots of snaps that can kind of be taken off his plate and have him kind of be just an absolute monster on obvious passing downs and let him go after and get the quarterback. Yeah.
It would be a very fun year for the Baltimore Ravens if they generate a lot fewer defensive snaps. So the combination of very effective takeaway football on defense and effective offense that returns to, you know, the, some of the really top Lamar years, 19, 23, 24, where they're moving the ball effectively. They don't have any problem for it. They have no fear of going for it on fourth down and two, you know, regularly from just about anywhere on the field. If all of those things are working properly and they reduce defensive snaps, I would love to have wide receiver-esque chatter from defenders about, man, I'm just getting, not getting enough playing time. What do you want? You want us to play more defensive snaps? Is that what you want?
Yeah, sure. Would you like, absolutely.
And
yeah.
I wish that same thing was as effective as a retort for wide receivers who want the ball more often. What, would you rather us have the lead by 21 and be running out the clock, or would you rather have a close game and you get more targets? Which would you like to have, Johnny?
Right.
But it's right. For whatever reason, that doesn't, this offense, it just doesn't quite fit me. I'm not a focal point. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think you hit it right on the head. You want the defense to be playing fewer snaps. That means we're winning. We're probably winning a lot more games, and you know, the defense is being a lot more effective than it's been in the last couple of years. And which, you know, and the offense should in turn be able to, you know, generate more points on more turnovers and getting more possessions.
It's an exciting big play offense in the Moncanieers, but it's also something that in 25 in particular, they were almost too explosive for their own good, particularly pointing at that Buffalo game. They could not seem to maintain a drive when they needed to. They could break away and get scores, but they couldn't seem to maintain a drive to help themselves out.
Yeah, they had a couple of different games like that.
All right. In terms of what Trey Hendrickson does well, very quick out of his stance. He's one of the guys who really creates oversets in opposing left tackles, which means gives him all sort of inside out versatility on his pass rush moves. He often does fan that left tackle out a little bit, but because he's very effective getting to the outside shoulder of that tackle and going speed to power, left tackles often have to overset. And, you know, if they suspect a half man move is coming, particularly the outside, they're going to be more susceptible to both an inside move and the bull rush as well, where he's really been provided value in all those cases. That first step quickness is, I think, what really makes Trey Hendrickson a great pass rusher.
He's got tremendous get off right off the snap. And what I really love is the bend and leverage that he creates when he's bending over the edge. Like, he gets so low, and I mean, he's at a, you know, a slanted angle when he's getting around the left tackle, and it really, you know, it makes him small for that left tackle. So, you know, he, and I say left tackle because he mostly lines up against the left tackle
nearly 100% of the time. Yep.
Yeah. And it makes him small. It makes it hard for a left tackle to get both of his hands on him, and it allows him to just bend over and get past the off, you know, get past that up, that left tackle, and get to the quarterback. So yeah, I love his bend.
So you played on the defensive line, defensive tackle specifically, right? You didn't really play on the nose, right?
No, or not maybe the nose. I was mostly a three tech. Yeah.
Okay, so mostly a three tech. So when you're in that position, you would typically be taking a double team from, I mean, I guess it does depend on the type of run and whatnot, but if you're taking a double team in a normal gap situation, it's probably tackle guard you're getting in that situation, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. So when that shows up, you have to do some of the same things to try and make yourself small for the two guys who are trying to block with you. And the valuable tools you have, and correct me if I'm wrong, Rad, the ones that you added to your game, the big two are setting your feet in each foot in a way that neutralizes the two elements of the double team block, but also using, you know, potentially a corkscrew move where you go down and you give the opposing blockers less surface area to work with.
Yeah. Like basically, you know, when you're getting double teams, you know, our coaches said, you know, don't worry about the second guy, kick the first guy's butt. just, you know, whoever you're currently engaged, just attack him and just, you know, work to one side of him, not basically not two gap, which is basically, you know, you're standing right in front of him and you're just kind of pushing back and forth with each other. Get on one side of him, you know, his inside shoulder, outside shoulder, and kick the butt of half the man instead of the full man. And, the other way is, like you were saying, is figuring out that corkscrew to split that double team. And they basically, you're making yourself small. So you're angling your body so that you're kind of daggering into the gap between the two of them, and you're getting through that way. So, yeah.
And usually with the corkscrew, you're usually getting low, putting one knee almost on the ground, right, to do that.
Yes. And, mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's exactly kind of what Trey does when he's going one-on-one with somebody, is he can really get low to the ground, get that bend, get, you know, almost have his knees on the ground, but still being able to bend and get around that corner.
All right. Great stuff. Always appreciate having you tell us about that. 81 career sacks in 117 games. Here's what's really good. 117 games is a lot, by the way. So we're talking about, what, 6.5 full seasons? No, actually, like 7 full seasons, be 119 games. And he's played, I think he's played 8 years in the league. So anyway, that amount of playing time is a significant denominator over which these impressive things is happening. He's had a terrific rate of total pressures in his career, and he has a 39% close rate. Now, you've heard me talk about some guys in college whose close rates are up into the low 40s. Some of them have been up into the mid 40s. Invariably, that'll be for a single season or maybe over a 2-year period where they're dominating all of college football with tons of sacks and quarterback hits. But it's very hard to have that high a percentage of your total pressure events be quarterback hits or sacks. And incredibly, Hendrickson has done that pretty much his entire career. He gets to the quarterback and impacts him directly a lot of the time, which is something the Ravens really need. They want quick pressures, don't get me wrong. You want that on the margin, but that's kind of the $1 win. The $10 win is getting the sack, and sometimes a $12 win might be getting a quarterback hit, because that can even be a bigger impact on the game going forward. But probably it's about a $7 win probably.
Sure. Yeah. So yeah, me as a defensive lineman, I'm always like, I'll take the sack over a quarterback hit. You still hit the quarterback, you know, they could still complete the pass or, you know, get out of, you know, trouble to do whatever. A sack, it's 100% loss every time. So always take
the sack. How about a batted pass? Somebody on your team gets the interception, and yet you're the only one who could figure out that you're the one who touched the ball.
Oh, if you bat
it,
defensive lineman, we make it known when we bat a pass, especially if that pass ends up getting intercepted.
There you go. Yeah, you'd be up there using a little tip motion.
Yes,
there.
Jumping up and down. Yes, all of that. Yes.
All right. 18.3% missed tackle rate for Hendrickson career. He, though, has regularly plagued Ronnie Stanley in a current sense and other Ravens left tackles like Villanueva. Since 21, when he came over from the Saints. But he's definitely a player who the Ravens are going to be very happy is on their team at this mm-hmm. point.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Ronnie's glad he's a teammate.
The deal itself is a 2-year deal now for $60 million, and there's options effectively that take it to a 4-year deal, and they pay him another $52 million over that period. I thought a very team-friendly deal that Hendrickson signed. I know there was reduced interest in him because of the injury that he's just suffered, his age, and probably the fact, you know, that it was well known that nobody's willing to trade a first round draft pick for the guy. And the Bengals tried all season to do it, and they weren't able to, or tried up until the trade deadline.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It's kind of surprising that they weren't able to get a deal done. I wonder how hard the Bengals were trying to trade him. They tend to be stubborn with a lot of things when dealing with contract situations. So I wonder how much they were trying to trade him to begin with, but I'm glad they weren't able to get it done, because if he ends up with us.
All right. Well, let's talk about a good season for Trey Hendrickson. What does that look like for you?
Yeah, so I have, you know, kind of in a reduced snaps play between 30 and 35 snaps a game, and get about 10 to 12 sacks in the season, and helps improve the Ravens pass rush, get back into kind of the top 10 of the league with, you know, just with being able to get more pressure out of your front four without having to blitz extra men or kind of get creative in your pass rush team.
Okay. I think that's good. It started like we were right on the same sheet of music we're working from here, but mine is a little different. Remains healthy for 14 plus games. Is effective in a reduced role, 500 to 600 snaps, which should be exactly 30 to 35 per game. Rest helps him restore pass rush productivity, which returns to no worse than the top 20 in the league. Is a central figure in improving the Ravens pass rush to the top half of the league. So the Ravens obviously did not have a good pass rush this last year, but they were 1 and 2 in 23 and 24 in sacks respectively. So I don't think there's a reason why they shouldn't be able to move to the top half of the league. And in particular with the secondary playing at a higher level, I think that'll help that significantly. And this is maybe one of the big things to me. I don't know if Hendrickson is this guy, but provides mentorship to Mike Green and Zion Young. And those guys probably can really benefit from what Hendrickson can teach them. You know, mm-hmm. hand placement, hand fighting, what to look for in the opposing center, how he holds his hand, and what that means about whether he's moving into a he's going to kick slide or he's going to do certain other things with regard to going offensively after a defender with his hands. I'm not sure that every connection works that way. And I asked Kyle Van Noy about it when Joe Evans, who was the outside linebacker from from Iowa, right? Played a lot of snaps for the Ravens in one preseason game. They basically left him out there and they didn't have anybody else and injuries. And he had to play basically every single snap and they played a ton of defensive snaps and it wasn't pretty. And I asked Kyle after that, do you go to a guy like that and try and help him with anything or encourage him or whatever? And he goes, you know, it's really not my place. That, you know, if he comes to me and asks, sure, I'll help him. I'll be, you know, I'm an open book kind of thing. But I don't want to go over there and say, hey, look, maybe you should try this kind of thing when he's having, you know, the night of his life trying to stay alive against NFL players for the first time. And, you know, I just don't know that Hendrickson, you know, hopefully the ideal situation is that Green and Young seek out Hendrickson to show him this stuff. But if they don't, then I don't know that Hendrickson can force an issue like that.
Sure. Absolutely. Like, you know, part of being, you know, the leader is being there, but you also can't necessarily tell Green or you're doing this all wrong or this yeah. is not you're doing this wrong, because I mean they are still peers, even though, you know, obviously Hendrickson is kind of the big dog in the room. It's also, you know, kind of more the pass rush and the outside linebackers coaches role to say, hey Mike, you're doing this wrong, let me show you how to do it right, take a look at this, you know, this rep that Trey had. You know, right. this is how you should be doing this, as opposed right. to Trey kind of doing it unsolicited.
Yeah, every single one of these players too is extremely competitive, and a player like Zion Young, who's always been the best player on his team, I'm sure, basically throughout his, you know, football. I mean, it's almost true of every draft pick, right? But a second round draft pick at number 45 overall, who comes out with the kind of accolades he did out of Missouri, he's been the best player for pretty much his whole football life. And if Hendrickson came to him with any kind of advice like this, I'd almost feel like, you know, why don't you watch your own game, old man? You know, I'm here to mm-hmm. take your job. I'm not here to learn from you. Kind of thing. Sure. It wouldn't surprise me if that were the kind of response he would have. Now, you know, Mike Green seems like a different human being at the podium, but I'm sure he's got that competitive fire in him too. That you know, he wants to find this way that's effective for him. And you know, the advice is only welcome under certain circumstances, like with yeah. us and our parents. How often is that advice really, you know, something we seek out?
Right. Exactly. Yep.
All right. A great season. What does that look like for Trey Hendrickson?
So I had a great season as he continues kind of, he comes back to the 23-24 type of production, even if it's still in that kind of 30 or 35 snap range. But the effectiveness that he had when he was with the Bengals those couple of years before he got hurt, he kind of returns to that level or close to that level as a pass rusher, is the key driving force to the Ravens becoming a top five pass rush team and sacking the quarterback in the top five, and is also the key cog in them being able to pressure while only rushing four. And, you know, without additional blitzes, I think if he's able to do that, you know, whether it's, you know, getting double teamed and freeing up Green and Jones and Matabike and Campbell, all of them to have one-on-one situations. And that's how you able to rush for, or him just being that absolute nightmare off the line himself. I think that would be a great season for him.
Yeah, well, that certainly would be a great season if he returned to that kind of productivity. I've got a little lower bar for it, plays 16-plus games, and per snap, pass rush effectiveness returns to 90% of his 2024 form with 35 to 40 snaps per game. So I have him only about five more snaps per game. I really don't want to see him playing a lot of snaps. If he plays 700 snaps this year, I think it's too much. You know, that would be 41 and change per game. I want to see no more than 40 snaps per game. And if he did that at 90% of the effectiveness, I still think he'd be between maybe 10 and 13 sacks. Because that doesn't mean like 90% of the results. It means 90% of the effectiveness. And I think that's where I'd see that coming up. I think he could return under those circumstances to top 10 PRP, pass rush productivity. Sorry, that's the PFF stat. Leveraged by the secondary's ability to deny targets. So I think that could potentially be much better in Baltimore than it was in Cincinnati a couple of years ago. And that could be a big bonus for him. And the Ravens remain vigilant to restrict his usage to keep him fresh and minimize injury risk by having off the field on most rundowns and retiring early in lopsided games. I don't want anybody fighting for additional sack totals and snaps. And Hendrickson is the one who's got to say, look, your job is to sit down when I tell you to sit down. You're under contract for 4 years here, so don't worry about your totals. You're already likely making the Hall of Fame based on the career you've had. You know, you're certainly going to be close, and the Super Bowl is the thing that's going to get you there. But anyway, minimize injury risk, and Ravens pass rush returns to the top quartile in terms of sacks. So I'd say, anyway, I don't want to put the standard too high, but if they were in the top eight in terms of sacks with this rebuilt unit and Minter scheme and whatnot, I'd be happy with that. Another way to say that is I might even be happy with lower than that if they're able to be effective rushing the quarterback with four men and their overall pass defense improves because of it.
Sure, absolutely. Like, you know, it all comes down to being able to have a better defense overall, you know, and that's also with an improved secondary. You want to get as few snaps as possible for your defense. So if he's able to get the sack or create pressure that on that third down that, you know, forces an incompletion and you're getting off the field, that's exactly what you want.
All right. Brandon, always a pleasure talking football with you. Really appreciate you coming on and doing this show, making time for it on a Friday night where there could be other things to do, even for a family guy like yourselves. Tell folks where they can ask you online about if they have a football question.
Sure. I'm on Twitter at bcroxton99. Love talking Ravens and, yeah, getting excited for the season.
Yeah, me too. Other folks out there, if you have a film study short you'd like to do anytime this offseason, just hit me up with a DM directly. Any kind of idea is good. Love to hear from more folks in the Reddit community, maybe that I haven't met before. Also would love to hear from anybody on Twitter who hasn't done a show before. Always looking for new people to talk football with that might be available for other series like this one in the future. Brandon, thanks again for coming on.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Ken.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.